Well, one thing we seemingly know about the restart of the NHL season, or the start of the NHL season, whenever that might be, one thing we seemingly know and that is set in stone, there will be an all-Canadian division at least to start. And for the sake of this conversation, let's just assume that it is an all-Canadian division all season long. All seven Canadian teams, maybe 10 meetings from a Flames perspective, maybe 10 meetings with all six of the Canadian opponents over the course of a 60-game season. How many games is not set in stone, but it sure does feel like the eventuality of an all-Canadian division is almost penned in. We've talked about it a lot, and I think it could be really fun. I really do, and I think that especially for a bridge season when we're trying to just get a season in, award a Stanley Cup, get the NHL some revenue, and then hopefully be in a much better, seemingly more normal circumstance come the fall of next year, I think that there are a lot of people interested in what this could look like. But I do have one question on the other side of it. I'm curious where you gentlemen are, and I'll ask it just straight up. Will seeing the same teams over and over, say, a 60-game schedule, really, you're seeing six teams and that's it, is that going to get tired? Is that going to get stale? And if so, how long does it take for that to get stale in your eyes?
I think the how long part is probably a hard one to answer, because I think it's different for everybody, and there's probably some that think it'll never get stale. But I think for me, yeah, playing six teams and going 10 times, I'm just trying to put myself in the player's shoes. I do think it will get a little old. Now, that being said, I think there's going to be moments where you think it's very stale and you're like, oh, this sucks really again. Like, I don't want to do this. And then there's going to be other moments of the season where you might play the Oilers, you know, three times in 5 nights and you love it. So, I think it's different everywhere. And I think everyone's going to have a different answer. I don't think anything is perfect. But I think you're probably fooling yourself if you don't think it's going to get stale, because it's only six opponents. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's a lot. If it was only five meetings against all six teams, I wouldn't say it would ever get stale, because I think it would be awesome. But 10 meetings is a lot, and it's over, you know, a 4 or 5 month span. So it's a lot of repetition, and it's a lot of the same thing over and over and over again. So it's going to get old. There's going to be moments where it's very exciting, Logan, but I think you'd be fooling yourself if you don't think it's going to get stale at some point. But either way, I still think the chance to kind of revive the rivalry a little bit and to have matchups that you wouldn't normally have multiple times a year, that part's certainly exciting. I'm not going to deny that. But yeah, playing six teams 10 times each is definitely going to get stale, at least for me.
I think a lot of it's going to depend on what comes of the rivalries and how the games play out. There's the natural inclination, and Will, you even said it, right? Everyone's going to be excited for the Flames-Oilers games, because last year, every time they did it, it was just it was madness. There was tussles, there was fights, there was goals, there was all that sort of stuff. And obviously, not every rivalry is going to be like that, but if they can develop one with Montreal, or one comes naturally with Vancouver because of the guys that came over, then I think it has the possibility of not being stale. But I think on the surface, it's hard to look at it, you know, seeing a team 10 times and only, you know, getting that variety a couple different ways, I think could probably lead to it. I would probably lean that way without seeing it and being, like, so we were used to having it all, right? This is gonna be a huge difference from year over year. We're used to seeing every team at least once home and away, and now you're limiting it down to six other teams. I think there's a possibility it could be really good for a couple of teams, but it could wind up being stale after a while.
Well, and I'll be honest with you guys, like, I hadn't even thought about it until the weekend. I went on Josh Goldberg's show in Toronto on the weekend, and he asked me that question.
That's not a real name.
And I swear to God, it is. And I was like, huh, I'd never thought of that before until it was posed to me, and I thought, well, yeah, I mean, I guess there could be the potential of it getting stale, and you're like, oh, do we have to see the Senators again? But I guess for me, I look at it in a few different ways. First of all, like, I'll be happy if it's 60 games against only the Montreal Canadiens. it's still better than nothing. Like, if it was a 60-game, every night you're playing the same team, it's still NHL hockey. We're still broadcasting games. So I'm going to be for it. And the alternative is always going to be worse. So if this is the best they can possibly do, I'm not going to complain about it, A. But then B, maybe I'm being the old optimistic glass half empty guy, but I really think the best part of this division from a Calgary standpoint or any of the other teams is that I really see next to nothing separating six of the seven teams. If Ottawa is the clear seven, and then that's what I believe, that Ottawa would be the clear seven, I don't see a whole lot separating the other six. From Toronto to Montreal, Winnipeg, Calgary, Edmonton, Vancouver, I see very little between those teams. I don't know if there is a clear-cut front runner. I don't know if there is a clear-cut six in that group. And that, to me, could make for unbelievable parity with three-point games already a part of the NHL schedule. I just feel like that standings race and the importance of every game being played is going to be huge, which could also, I think, take away and mitigate the feel of staleness. And then finally, I think the fact that two of Calgary's top rivalries seem to be heating up again well, the fact that the Oilers rivalry is as good as it has been in decades, hell, that preseason game they played or pre-return to play game they played had emotion and hard hitting. That game was better than any of the games against Winnipeg that actually meant something. So I think that tells me that this rivalry is absolutely back. And I think all of the off-season moves that we've seen between Calgary and Vancouver, specifically one way, I think adds to the intrigue of the Canucks matchup. So I'm not as worried myself about it getting stale, but I think that's a personal thing. I think it will be for some and won't be for others, but the most important thing for me, I'd be curious as to how you see the breakdown of an all-Canadian division. The most important thing for me is that I see so little between six of the seven teams, and I think the quality of competition and the parity between those six teams will give us some really, really good hockey on a night-in, night-out basis.
I don't disagree. I think the one thing, too, that we maybe don't talk enough about, it's one thing to do it in the playoffs over a 10-day or 12-day span. Let's not forget, though, that separation is what makes some of those rivalry games the best. When you have a Flames-Oilers game in November, they don't play again until January. That's what makes it awesome. I don't know what that'll be like. Yes, obviously, every game that's played in the same week, for an example, it's got a great potential to be phenomenal. But if you play three games in 5 days, the first week of January, for an example, and then you play it again on the third week of January, I just don't know how exciting it's going to be able to ramp yourself back up. Now, to your point, Pat, I think some of the parity is going to help with that. But overall, guys, I just think that we're talking about jamming so many games into such a small, you know, real world time in terms of months. And I feel like that's what's going to greatly contribute to the staleness of the schedule next season. Now, as you say too, Pat, I think it's different for everybody, but there's no denying the parity. And I don't think, amongst the top and outside of Ottawa, I think we all agree they're probably the worst of the Canadian teams, and yet had a very good offseason. And they're
a better team than they were,
great
for sure.
Strides, for sure. But they're still, you know, for me, the worst Canadian team on paper. I think that the parity is going to greatly contribute to some of the excitement we see. But yeah, I just think that the inability to have separation in the schedule, Pat, playing the Oilers eight times in 5 weeks, it's going to get old.
But that could potentially work the other way in that, like, Logo, if something happens in a back-to-back, if the Flames are playing the Oilers back-to-back, or even if it's not the Oilers, say they're playing the Habs back-to-back, and something happens in that first game and then you play them the next night, that could be really interesting. It may not play into things exploding, but at the very least, you get that kind of immediate rematch if something happens. That's kind of the flip side to it, is that you might get that immediate opportunity to exact some revenge if those scenarios end up coming to play.
For sure, you could absolutely see some of that, because in most cases, like Will said, there's usually separation. It's not, you know, if we see Montreal here in November, they're likely not seeing them again in Montreal until the spring of a regular NHL season. And that's, you know, anything that had happened in the first matchup likely doesn't bleed over that long. So we could definitely see some things like that happen. I'm just curious, really, I think the more that we've talked in this conversation, the more I think it's going to come down to scheduling and how they space out some of these matchups, how it's going to affect whether it gets stale for some fans or not.
Now,
if they're really smart about how they lay it out and you're not jamming too much of one team in there, I think it could work out.
It wouldn't be all that different to kind of the early to mid-2000s when you played your division eight times a year.
But again, that's 82, right?
It's true. It is over 82, like that's and not over 60. It's a sixth
didn't play
of your
Minnesota.
Schedule.
Right. You didn't play Minnesota and Vancouver only. Like you played everywhere. And that's the big difference, I think.
Yes, you got the games against the other Western Conference divisions, and I think
right.
you got one against the other the Eastern Conference. Either you went there or they came to Calgary was the way that really divisional heavy schedule worked. And that only went on for a few years and then they balanced it a little bit more.
It was stupid.
It was good and it was bad. Like there was one year it worked really well. I believe the final 14 games of Calgary's season one year were against Minnesota, Vancouver, Edmonton, and Colorado, and they were in a tooth and nail battle with the Wild and Canucks, I believe, for top spot in the division. So that year it worked out. Other years it wasn't as good, and they rebalanced it a couple of years later. So who is your so are we all anybody care to disagree? Are we all on board that the clear seven is Ottawa, even if they did get better? I know, Will, you believe that. I believe that. Logo, do you care to dissent in that?
No, they suck.
Okay. I don't know if they suck.
Awful.
They're going in the right direction.
Garbage.
Who's the, is there a clear-cut Logo best team for you in a theoretical all-Canadian division?
This is the hardest one because your point earlier was correct that it's very close. I probably Toronto, just based on expectations and that offensive firepower, I would say they're probably, as of right now, number one. That would be my guess going in.
Well,
yeah, I mean, your question about is there a clear cut? No, there's not.
If you had to choose one, who would it be?
Toronto.
Trying to think who it would be. I think I probably would go there too. I think Edmonton could be in the mix if their goaltending was a little bit better and they weren't without Klefbom. I think the Flames are in that mix, but you know the question marks about that forward group and specifically when it comes to the playoffs in that forward group. But you're right, there's no clear cut, and I think you could make the case, like I think you could make a salient case for Montreal or for Winnipeg when they're healthy and their goaltending. Like you could make a case for any one of those teams, and that's really interesting to me. So I think it's got the possibility of being a really awesome and fun 60 games. But I think it's fair to also point out that for some, it might get stale. Let's read a couple of texts at 960-960. This says, 3 games in 5 nights against Edmonton will be fun for all fans of both teams. 3 games in 5 nights against Ottawa will only be fun for the Tkachuk family. That's probably true. I'll say this, though. I'll take the 3 and 5 against Ottawa if it means I can get the 3 and 5 against Edmonton. I will do that. Also, kind of on the side of it being stale, this says, lucky pretty much all the teams are exciting in some way. If this was the late 1990s, it would be painful, no doubt. There are some bad years in this country where the Oilers upsetting a team in the first round was like the best the Canadian team could hope for. Wedley writes, Will's correct. It will get stale, and the coverage for the Leafs and McDavid will become even more over the top. On the other side of things, 960-960, imagine the Flames playing the Canucks and Oilers 10 games each will be exciting, but they're going to beat the crap out of each other and might be too run down for the playoffs. That's my only concern. This reads, could be a fun change-up year. A back-to-back in the schedule with the same team could make things more interesting and build some animosity. That comes from Mike, who goes on to say, Flames played the Canucks and Oilers 8 times after the full lockout year, and I remember it being awesome. Oilers were actually good, and the animosity was palpable. A few texts at 960-960 when it comes to the possibility of an all-Canadian division and what it might look like. We are underway on a Tuesday edition of The Big Show. My name is Pat Steinberg alongside Logan Gordon and Will Nault. Logo and I are live in our iconic studio powered by Iconic Electric and Controls. Innovation, it's iconic. Contact them today at iconicec.ca. Guys, let's dive into a discussion we broached a little bit yesterday, and it goes back to the conversation we had about the Flames or any team being able to maybe exploit the situation in Tampa Bay. And specifically for the Calgary Flames, is there an opportunity they could exploit? And no, Will, before you jump down my throat, I'm not talking about an offer sheet. I promise no offer sheet conversation here. But Calgary supposedly in the market for another right shot defenseman. And definitely there is a hole when it comes to natural right side defensemen on their roster right now. And I know that there's talk about Nesterov, or there's talk about Valimaki, or somebody else being able to fill that third right side defenseman spot. But in terms of a natural right shot defender, there is a bit of a hole on the roster right now. Will, is there a way the Flames could grab restricted free agent Eric Chernak and take advantage of Tampa's cap situation? Are they able to exploit a Tampa team that is in real cap hell right now?
To be perfectly honest, no. I can, you know, not an easy answer that jumps out to you, or one that, you know, makes the Flames necessarily a better team. The Flames are not necessarily out of cap jail themselves, and the Flames would have to trade money back, which Tampa would not take. So, unfortunately, I just don't think there's a situation where Calgary can make a realistic trade for Chernak.
Logs?
I wouldn't say it's impossible. I think it's unlikely. I mean, if you're in a position maybe that you can solve your own cap issues first, if you're able to free up some room, I can probably see Tampa Bay being, you know, not happy, but willing to move on from somebody that they might not be able to get signed and get something back in return for them. So if you're able to open up cap space from the Flames end of things, which is a lot harder to actually do than it is for me to say it is, I'm not saying it's likely, but there's a possibility that it could happen.
I think we're probably talking partially pie in the sky. I mean, first of all, I don't know if, I have no idea if Tampa has any desire to even go down that road. They might be a team that will do 5 or 6 or 7 other things that they don't want to do before trading Chernak. And Chernak was great in the postseason and great on the road to the Stanley Cup. And the reason I look for it, or the reason I throw it out there, is because he is a right shot defender. He is unsigned. He's still unsigned. And the Lightning have less than $3 million of cap space to sign 3 RFAs, and they haven't been able to make any other deals to this point. But Tampa may just, it may be a non-starter for them. But assuming that the Lightning would be open to it, I don't think it's, like, I think that you could make it work. And if there would be an opportunity for the Flames to go after a guy that in normal circumstances, the Lightning would probably never think about giving up, a 23-year-old right shot defender who seems to just be coming into his own, I think that you would need to investigate that if you're the Flames and pay market value for it. And I think that I don't think you would need to trade money back the other way. Like, I don't think that would have to be a part of the condition. You would put yourself in a spot where you'd have to make another move. To your point, Will, I mean, like, they wouldn't be able to acquire Chernak, sign him, and still be cap compliant.
I think it's fantasy land myself.
It's November in the weirdest offseason of all time. We kind of have to play
sure.
in fantasy
for
land.
Sure. On topic on the radio, I don't see a possibility. The Flames would have to make like 3 different trades to make it work. Just because if they had more money available, I think it's an easier question. But
they've got
really have that.
We're thinking about $1 million is what they've got for cap space, right? Let's just say give or take a couple $100,000. Right. So what they would have to do, they'd acquire him. They probably wouldn't sign him right away. He'd still be a restricted free agent. And then you'd have to move somebody else out. You'd have to move a Derek Ryan, or you'd probably mean that you don't sign Shillington, or you sign him to type a deal that you're thinking about him in the American League, or be willing to lose him on waivers. Like, I think that you would have to get a little bit creative. But man, and it might, it very well could be fantasy land. And I would, if I were to truly handicap Tampa's desire in being in wanting to do that, I would probably put it in the 25% range. I mean, that's a pretty important player for them. And I think that Julien Brisbois will try to do everything to make sure he doesn't move one of his restricted free agents. It's just, it's hard, Logo, to see a world where Tampa signs all three of those guys without making one or two like significant moves with the other part of their roster. And our conversation yesterday was about how many teams are really not willing to give them a lot of help right now. And so I wonder if at some point Brisbois isn't forced into thinking about doing something he really doesn't want to do. And if that's the case, I think there's a potential opportunity for a team like Calgary to pounce on.
Well, the nice thing is in this conversation too, he's probably also, Chernak speaking of him, the third of those three RFAs that are on their priority list, with all due respect to him. And I think you want to get Sergachev and Cirelli.
Would Sergachev be ahead of him for you too, Will?
Yeah, it's tough. I'm not going to sit here and say guarantee. And again, I think Julien Brisbois would have maybe a different opinion than me in Calgary. But I would say that I would probably put, like, it's tough. I think they're all super valuable to the team. I think they're all, he might be slightly ahead of Sergachev for me, but it's not a big gap.
And the only reason that I would be targeting him if I'm Calgary as opposed to a guy like Sergachev is, I mean, the fact that one's a right shot and one's a left shot. The fact that Chernak is that right side guy, and we've been talking about that for quite some time. That's the only reason I'd be targeting him over the other guy at this point.
No, and that's, I understand that, but I just think the way I'm looking at things is, if I'm Tampa Bay, my list at least is probably Cirelli, Sergachev, and Chernak.
And Chernak.
And you know, Sergachev comes with a high draft pick title to go along with him. He was a top 10 pick by Montreal originally. I think Chernak's a second round guy from a different organization too. So for me, that's just my priority thinking there is, if they've got to give up a guy and it's third on their priority list, maybe they're more interested in that. But like Will said, who knows? Maybe we're wrong on that. And maybe Sergachev's the guy they'd rather give
here's,
up.
Here's what I would say.
Then like, it's different.
If the Flames could acquire that guy, if that actually was something that they could make work, and you had to give up a first round pick to bring him in and something else, like if the asking price was like a first round pick and Shillington, I'd do that in a heartbeat if I'm the Calgary Flames. You bring him in and you'd have to deal with the cap situation. And you'd have to get a little creative with your cap gymnastics. But I would do that in a heartbeat because I think it fills a role on your blue line. It fills kind of the last remaining dead spot on your roster potentially. And then you make a subsequent move after that. Maybe it's somebody on waivers and you move them to the American League. Maybe you can move a Bennett or you can move a Ryan or something like that. I think for a player like that, Will, if Tampa's willing to do it or Tampa's forced into doing it and you might have to give up a first-round pick to make it happen, I would absolutely investigate that if I'm the Flames. You're right. I mean, it's very speculative and idealistic thinking, but I noticed that we talked about Tampa yesterday, and it popped into my head. If they could make it happen, I'd be all for them making it happen.
I would, too. I'm worrying about it, and I call it fantasy land and kind of deny the conversation just because of the Flames salary cap situation. Like, trading Shillington in a first might get it done, but I still think you're depleting or deleting from your roster, and that, as a result, is making you worse. And, you know, for an example, that trade might actually end up being Bennett, Ryan, Shillington, and a first for Chernak. And I just don't know if that makes a lot of sense if you're the Calgary Flames. That's all. I think it absolutely fills a need. I think his age is right in the window that you want if you're Brad Treliving. I think there's no question they would be all over it. I just don't think with the Flames salary situation, it makes a ton of sense because I think you're going to have to delete more than you want to make it work.
The way that I would again, like, a lot of things would have to happen. Let me to close out the conversation before we hit the break. Let me get if this were the scenario, Flames trade and maybe these are not realistic when a negotiation would actually happen, but Flames trade a first and
hold on.
Okay, you're gonna write this down. So
no,
Flames.
No, just kidding.
It's time to find out who's who. Welcome inside another edition of Who Says No?
Not quite sure that the production nailed exactly what the...
No, absolutely not.
What the feel of the segment was supposed to be.
Nope.
Okay, so you go Shillington and a first to Tampa for Chernak. Don't sign him right away. And then move Derek Ryan somewhere for a fourth round pick. Whether or not that's realistic or not, say that that was realistic. Would you do that if you're the Flames? If those were the ways that you make it work cap-wise and to bring that player in. Logo?
Yes.
Will?
Sorry, well, I got confused by the really bad splitter. Can you just say
so you
it again?
You go, say that the asking, and maybe it's realistic, maybe it's not realistic, but it's Shillington and a first for Chernak, and you bring him in, and then to make the contract work when you eventually sign it, you send Derek Ryan somewhere and get a fourth round pick in return. Would you do that if that was actually on the table?
Yeah, I probably would think about it. I would think about it.
Again,
I guess I'm hesitant because I don't know if that's even like
I don't know either.
I can't have a confident feel one way or the other. So I would say yeah, if that was on the table, yeah, I would probably do it because it seems like it's a very low ask.